Welcome to Career Buzz, Canada's unique radio conversation that empowers lives, enriches careers, and energizes organizations. Que voy a hacer, je ne sais pas. Que voy a hacer, je ne sais plus. Today on your show, Career Buzz goes to the Canadian Positive Psychology Association's first conference and brings you the best presenters, insightful delegates in short interviews to inspire your career and your practice. Hi, it's Mark Franklin, practice leader of Career Cycles, a career management social enterprise, and I'm pleased to be your host today on Career Buzz. And thanks for tuning in this morning. Special welcome to members of the Association of Career Professionals International, tuning in on the internet from across the globe. It was an insightful experience for me to attend the Canadian Positive Psychology Association conference in Toronto, July 20 and 21. Plus, it was a real pleasure to attend the conference as your Career Buzz correspondent, collecting interviews that we'll share today as part one and more in part two on September the 12th. Career Buzz listeners will recognize the name of Louisa Jewell from her time co-hosting Career Buzz. Louisa is the Canadian Positive Psychology Association's president, and here's Louisa with a brief intro to today's show.
Hi, Mark, and thank you so much for featuring some of these interviews on CIUT today. So what you're about to hear is a series of interviews that Mark Franklin did while he was at the first Canadian conference on positive psychology. So it was our inaugural conference, and it really was the official launch of the Canadian Positive Psychology Association.
Tune in to the upcoming interviews. You can learn more about the CPPA and at the association's website, which is positivepsychologycanada.com. So here's the lineup for interviews this morning. Louis Aloro leads a network of change agents in Cleveland, Ohio, helping individuals and organizations kick it up a notch through positive psychology, the science of success, well-being, and flourishing. You'll hear about Louis's inspired initiative, SOMO Leadership Labs. That's Social Emotional Change, SOMO, to change careers and lives in Cleveland and beyond. Haesun Moon leads Solution Focused Canada and is Program Director of Solution Focused Coaching Program at the Faculty of Social Work at the University of Toronto. Learn from Haesun the three questions you can increase the effectiveness of any meeting with any helping professional by 40% and move clients from fascination to solution creation. Plus, conference chair Jamie Grumman on halcyonic well-being, Jim Clemmer on the link between positive psychology and organizational leadership, and Jamie Cundy on solving the world's problems through music at Song for Africa, and more. We begin with keynote Robert Valorand. Bob is president of the International Positive Psychology Association and professor at Université du Québec à Montréal. He speaks about how harmonious passion inoculates you against burnout and how obsessive passion can only be transformed into harmonious passion when you know its role in life. And he'll talk about how an interest becomes a passion. As we're going through today's interviews, if you do have questions or comments, please email me. It's mark@careercycles.com. And I'll bring your comments and questions into the show after the next few interviews. Here is Robert Valorand.
So, Bob Valorand, welcome to Career Buzz.
Thank you very much, Mark.
Now, what do you like about your work, learning and researching and teaching about psychology and positive psychology?
Well, my work is very diversified, and I guess there's several elements to it, and all of them I'm passionate about. The research, the science aspect of it is extremely important to me, and I really enjoyed it, trying to come up with a new hypothesis and trying to see if it's going to come out in the way that I thought or open up boundaries. And, like our work on passion, for instance, we were the first to look into it from a psychological perspective, and basically the theory we have right now is the only theory, you know, in psychology on having a passion for an activity. So that's exciting. The fact that I'm president of the International Positive Psych Association also very satisfying and exciting. We're trying to you know, it's a new association that was, you know, created in 2007.
Yes.
A lot of things to do to get things off the ground, try to support groups like the CPPA that we're, you know, trying to do right now with a great conference. Also, the mentoring and nurturing of future university professors, I love that very much. I have 20 of my former students that are now university professors, and to me, you know, the generativity of it, you know,
yes.
I really, the connection that stays for life. But you work with them, there is something very special, and that is related to the work domain as well. It's trying to help someone achieve the goals that they have themselves selected.
Well, you're speaking about this with a lot of passion in your own voice. Now, you just gave an inspiring keynote here at the first Canadian Positive Psychology Conference about passion. I want to delve into three areas of your talk briefly, but first, can you orient listeners? When you talk about passion, you've talked about harmonious and obsessive passion. Very briefly, what does that mean?
Right. First, you know, passion is when really you engage in something, an activity that really that you love, it's very important to you, and you spend, you know, a regular time on it. So work could be one, could be hobbies as well. And there are two ways of engaging in the activity, two ways of being passionate about this activity. One is harmonious and the other one is obsessive. And obsessive passion is basically when the activity takes control over you. So that, you know, you don't have as much choice of when to do it and when not and how to do it. And you feel controlled by your activity that you love.
Yes.
But still controlled. And with harmonious passion, you're in control. So that you can actually have more latitude in how you want to do things. There's more choice, more freedom involved, at least psychologically. And you feel that what you do is what you should be doing at that moment in time. A good example, perhaps, would be the person who is obsessively passionate about work. And it's past five, and he or she knows that he or she has commitments at home, but still wants to, you know, put in a few more time
yes.
at work. And,
yes.
and the conflict it creates and the problem it may create with relationships at home. So all of this is like obsessive passion. When you're harmoniously passionate, okay, had a great time at work today, time to go home, and let's focus on what's going to happen tonight and have a great time.
So now there's an influence on this distinction between harmonious and obsessive passion in the world of work. You talked a lot about it. One of the things that really caught my attention was about burnout. We have a lot of stories of burnout in the world of work here in Canada and across the globe. And you talked about some ways that passion can protect us from burnout. Can you
Yes.
tell us about that?
Yeah, with harmonious passion, you're just as passionate about your work as with obsessive passion. But because you have control over it, and the way you approach the activity, first you will have a good time, a great time at work, even laughing sometimes. Doesn't mean you're not serious. It's just that you're not taking yourself too seriously, which is a big difference. So you take your work very seriously, but still you have a great time with the people you work with. You interact positively, can even smile, laugh, whatever. But then you focus on the activity, and when the day is done, you've done your work, it's time to go home and do you know the night's activity with your spouse, with the family, and whatnot. So by doing that, you actually have a great time at work, which facilitates the emotional, positive emotional experiences at work.
Yes.
But then you're protecting yourself against a conflict that you have with other life activities. With obsessive passion, it's the other way around. You don't get that benefit, that positive emotional experience, that benefit that you have with harmonious passion. And you constantly experience conflict with other life activities because all you want to do basically is work, work, work. And this other stuff is getting in the way of your work. So you're being, you know, conflicted between your work and obviously other life activities or partners and whatnot. And unfortunately, the net result is not very positive.
Any tips for listeners who might find themselves thinking, yeah, I'm a little bit obsessively passionate about my work. Now, that's dangerous, we're learning. That can lead to burnout, a lack of well-being. Any tips on how to shift away from obsessive to harmonious passion?
Well, you know, I think when we talk about shifting, I think first we need to understand, you know, the role of obsessive passion in people's lives. Like I briefly mentioned this and could not go into detail with, because of time constraint during the talk, sometimes obsessive passion plays an important role, a more compensation role, so that people compensate for the fact that they're not happy at home, not happy perhaps at work, but or maybe while doing some of the stuff with the kids, but work is important, and they do get some benefits from work. So they become obsessively passionate because it serves an important role. And in some ways, although it's not as adaptive as a harmonious passion, it can be adaptive. So you want to maintain that passion. You don't want to get rid of that. So what you want to do, actually, is to challenge that passion with some other passion in people's outside of work in their life.
Yes.
So try to help them find something else that they'll be passionate about. You know, Jean-Jacques Rousseau, the philosopher, used to say, reason doesn't control passion, another passion does. And that's interesting. And then people will say, well, then the next question is, how do I find something that I can be passionate about in my life? And then when people ask me that question, what I say is that, what were you passionate about when you were a teenager?
Yes. So there's the place to look, and that's another area that I want to delve into. We're talking to Bob Vallerand here at the Canadian Positive Psychology Association conference. He's the president of the International Positive Psychology Association and a professor at what university?
Université du Québec à Montréal.
Thank you.
All right.
So we talked a little bit about that harmonious passion and its connection to avoiding burnout, and that this idea of how people develop passions. And you did mention in the presentation the point where an interest can turn into a passion. You know, we all use this word passion. It's such a common word, and it feels like the bar is set very high. If I'm not passionate, then I'm a loser, and I'll never be happy in my life. And I hear it all the time in our career practice. So you've talked a little bit about this this way that passions develop and where people can look in their own lives for the clues maybe that would lead them to an interest that might turn into a passion that would lead them into all of this well-being areas that we've talked about. So can you talk a little bit about that? Where do these passions come from?
Well, basically, where it starts with you. You know, like I'm passionate, you know, about my research, my work at the university. I'm passionate about, I'm a basketball player. I also play the guitar in a rock group. And so I'm passionate about these things, about traveling and sharing ideas and experiences with my wife. And so all of this to me is are passions. And because they resonate about me, about my identity. So this, you know, when philosophers used to say, you know thyself. That's basically,
yes.
You know yourself. And it goes also back to the work of Marty Seligman and about the strength. You know, what are my strengths? What am I good at? What do I like? And once you identify that core area that is you, then you can try to investigate, see, you know, how can I engage in activities that will, you know deal with those issues. Is it sports? Is it arts? Is it music? At work, what aspect of my work do I like? Do I like to be a leader? Do I like more to be more like a participant that's still active? But in what aspect do I like to see things in the broader picture or more the detail aspect? I'm good at details. Once you've identified that, you can focus on what's important to you, and what you start, you know, what you love can actually becomes meaningful and important to you, will be part eventually of your identity, and then it turns into a passion. This initial interest may or may not turn into a passion depending on how meaningful you see it, how important it is to you, if it's part of your identity. And if it is all of those things, then it becomes a passion.
Yeah, and a moment ago you were saying one place to look is in your own childhood, your own youth, because that's where you had a natural affinity. So telling one story, remembering, what did you like when you were a kid?
Exactly.
Is probably a good place to look.
For sure. And, you know, people grow up too quickly sometimes.
Yes.
And they don't remain that little kid, you know, that they used to be, that used to enjoy things. And people will tell you, what happened to you? You used to be like that. What? And people usually get too serious.
Yes.
And so there's nothing wrong with being heavily involved in something, being committed, passionate about it, and having a great time and laughing. And because then, you know, everything is possible. You open up your mind to possibilities when you're happy and when you do things that you really feel like you want to do.
It was that connection to identity and internalization. You said something in your talk, something like, when you start calling yourself a blank,
yeah,
a basketball player, an yeah, artist, when you start calling yourself that is when your interest has turned into passion.
Exactly. It becomes part of your identity. And it will really be part of your identity when your friends now start calling you, oh, here goes a basketball player here. We have
yes,
the basketball player, he's in the house. Or because they know you. Your close friends know who you are, what you're passionate about. And in fact, the social aspect of passion is very interesting. You know, at work, people know what to give, you know, a birthday gift. They know what to give you. You know, like a putter if you're a golfer or something else, or a tennis racket if you're passionate about tennis. You know, people know about those things.
Yeah. Yeah. I call myself now an amateur astronomer. I've always had an interest in astronomy.
There you
and
go.
It's interesting when I say, I'm an amateur astronomer, and then it becomes part of my
yeah,
identity rather than, I kind of like looking at the stars and figuring out the constellations.
Exactly.
Okay, so listeners, you've got a point there. Now you can start calling yourself an amateur anything, and it's going to help you develop your interest into a passion.
Exactly.
Great. Finally, Bob, just bringing it back to the personal, in your own career and life, if I can ask you for one thing you might share with listeners from your own personal learning and experience about making good career and life choices. What have you learned personally from your own life experience, work, that you can share with listeners about that?
Well, it's for maybe two things. First, follow your heart. I think that with a safety net.
Yes.
So that you always have a plan A, plan B. Sometimes people say, well, I love arts. I want to be an actor. Well, I have a plan B. Go for it. I have a plan B. And don't be afraid to go for it.
Yes.
I had a doctoral student. I won't name the student, but I had problems because he wouldn't want to commit because he was afraid that he might not make it as a university professor.
Yes.
So he would not put in the time, so they had an excuse. I said, go for it. Go for it. And if it doesn't work out, well, at least you have something else you can do. And he's now a university professor. So go for it. Follow your heart. Don't be afraid to follow your passion, but have a safety net as well.
Bob Valoran, thank you so much for joining us here on Career Buzz.
It's been my pleasure.
Louis Alora, welcome to Career Buzz.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us here today at the Canadian Positive Psychology Association conference. Now, you just presented, and we're here talking right afterwards. You presented some fascinating things. You seem like you really like what you do. What do you like about it?
I love that I'm teaching something that people are hungry for. So I feel very fortunate and grateful to be living my calling, passion, purpose in a way that the world is ready for. So I feel like I'm at the right place at the right time, and I've had my own career trajectory that was tumultuous at times, so this is a great place to be.
Now, what you're doing has something to do with what you call SOMO, social emotional leadership. What is that?
It's this idea that within networks, within communities, businesses, any type of group of people, schools, there are SOMO leaders, social emotional leaders, people who share a vision that things can be better, be different. These people can be given experiences of building their own psychological muscle using some tools from applied positive psychology and other related fields, and then they become more effective change agents back within their networks, within the organizations, within the businesses, within the schools. So we're really just not training everybody, but the right people. And so SOMO has become a cost-effective and sustainable way of doing development work.
Mm. And is it a consulting company, or is it a training and development group? What kind of work is it?
Yeah, so we do training, development, and consulting on culture, you know, shifting culture. I'm working on a citywide well-being initiative in Cleveland, Ohio, where we're trying to find and leverage as many social-emotional leaders as possible across a city through various organizations and community groups and all sorts of different places. So,
wow, sounds awesome. You guys should come up to Toronto and get us going here. Now, you mentioned briefly a tumultuous career trajectory. Can you share with listeners maybe just one turning point, one thing that was part of your tumultuous journey
well,
that might be interesting for listeners to hear?
It's probably a bit dramatic, but I was a high school English teacher at the beginning of my career and saw many students feel not good about who they were, and it really reminded me of me and my own experience. But as a teacher from the other side of the desk, I saw a way different epidemic, tapped into those kids' families, saw parents equally as dysfunctional, and I just thought, wow, you know, how do you affect change in a system like this? So I went on a circuitous route through my 20s, you know, always knowing that there was going to be answers, you know, to help facilitate change. And when I discovered applied positive psychology, I just immediately knew. I had a visceral sense through my body that this was it. Unless people learn how to think differently, we're just going to continue doing the same things over and over again and expecting different results.
You talk about that realization when you found positive psychology. I talk to Career Buzz guests a lot about clues. They notice clues, and the clues, if connected to sort of a mindset or something that you're thinking about, leads to a positive and inspired action, a change.
Mm.
Is that reflective of what happened with you when you left teaching? That's not an easy thing to do.
Yeah, I'd always wanted to be a teacher, you know, so finally getting there was a big moment, but I just was not passionate about teaching high school English, and so I knew that there was a greater calling and had that intuition. So even in my mid-20s, I remember friends working their way up their career ladders and a lot of people saying, well, what are you going to do with your life, Lewis? And I just said, you know, I just know I'll know when I know. And I'm so glad I listened to that intuition because I did. And so I just encourage people to follow that feeling.
Right on. And that's an inspired part of your story as well.
Yeah.
Now, there's a few things that you said in the presentation I really was struck by. But one thing about your presentation was that you actually shared this other media. You had this kind of video rap song thing that brought us in. The rap song talked about research. Like, that is so unusual. And you presented that as a kind of way of walking the talk, is the way you said it. Can you tell us, why would you bring something like that into a presentation, into this work that you're doing?
I think it's important we give people multi-sensory experiences, you know, to enable new neural connections. So I like to try to find different ways to infuse learning labs. We call them SOMA leadership learning labs, with as many different experiences for people to latch onto. And so how that is an example of walking the talk is that, you know, I know that, you know, as a teacher and as a learner, just how there's people learn in different ways, and especially as with adult development, we need to find ways to engage people and enroll people. And these are the types of verbs I like to use in this work. How do we enroll people in this dialogue of well-being? Science has something to say about it, but so does everyone else. You know something about what makes you happy. And so
yes.
How do we put a voice to that? How do we give people a voice to what it is that they know?
Right on.
I think we have the tendency to sometimes to idolize science, and I'm not I value it, but I don't idolize it.
Right on. There, you know, we get so focused on looking at the negative, and this is now opening the door. In fact, there was a quote that came on the screen a number of times, something like, when one door closes, another opens, but we get so used to looking at the closed door, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's just our negativity bias at work, is that we're wired to spot threats over opportunities. And really, the work in the SOMA Leadership Lab is akin to going to the gym is for your body, you know, but this is for your mind. We're building a new endurance to be able to rewire so that we're spotting more opportunities in the place where we traditionally see threats or negativity or what's not working.
So we're a quote here, we're wired for positivity but conditioned for negativity, was something that you said. So now, what about the wiring for positivity here, and what's one thing that you might share with listeners about how they can access that wiring, and if they're busy looking at the closed door, to stop looking at that closed door and start accessing this other kind of wiring that we have? What's an idea?
Yeah, so you know, a basic ritual in your day as to record your wins is something that we do in the SOMA Leadership Labs, and this is empirically validated. You know, anything that made you feel good in a day is a win. So can you be mindful about ritualizing a moment in your day where you're thinking back to what the wins were? A lot of people do it before they go to bed.
Yes.
At night. But not just thinking the win, feeling it again through your body is the key. Activating those same neurotransmitters, because our brains don't know if we're experiencing something or if we're thinking about experiencing something. So it's like we need to become our own masterful agents of change, almost our own pharmacists, controlling our own internal pharmacies,
I like
releasing
that.
Dopamine and serotonin
right
just
on.
In the thought. And so, Louis, what's one win for you today? One win for me today is being here in lovely Toronto on a beautiful day, having this conversation with you right now.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Now, finally, based on your own tumultuous career journey, what can you share with listeners about what you've personally learned about making good career and life choices?
I have a friend who's a coach who says, your intuition, it's a good one. You know, just really sharpening our ability to get in touch on the inside with what gives us a good emotional indicator. Dr. Valoran talked this morning about harmonious passion.
Yes.
You know, feeling it from the inside. And only you know what that burn feels like when you think about it for intrinsic purposes, not for the money or for the status or the prestige, but because you have a calling for it. And I think this is everyone's birthright. I'm so glad that I didn't listen to my friends when I was 24, 25 saying, well, just pick something, Louis, and stick with it, versus being curious and explorative to actually create the space. There's ways we can create space, psychological space, to get pulled towards it. They say positive psychology is about being pulled by our future.
Yes.
Our best possible future. So we can get clear. We can get clearer and clearer and clearer about what it is we're wanting. And we could help each other, you know, create the conditions to get there. And I'm excited to do the SOMA work because people are hungry to be enrolled into that conversation.
Great. If listeners want to find out more about you, Louis, or your work, how do they do that?
They could find me at SOMO, S-O-M-O, leadershiplabs.com or louisaloro.com.
Louis, thank you so much for joining us here on Career Buzz today.
Thanks.
Jim Clemmer, welcome to Career Buzz.
Thank you.
What do you like about what's going on in your career these days?
Well, it is very connected to my passion and my values and the sense of meaning that I have in my life in terms of trying to help others grow and develop.
And what do you do? What kind of, your tag says organizational consultant. What does
right.
that mean?
Well, I provide leadership training and organization effectiveness consulting services to mostly medium and larger organizations, managers, supervisors, executives. And I've written quite a lot in the whole area. I've written 7 books that deal with leadership and organization effectiveness.
Now, here we are at the Canadian Positive Psychology Association conference. What drew you to the conference?
I've been following Martin Seligman's work for a long time, and I've quoted a lot of his work in a lot of my work, in my books and materials. And we've just recently connected with an old colleague of mine, Jack Zenger, who has a company, Zenger Folkman, in the U.S., who have spent the last 10 years in strength-based leadership development.
Yes.
And so we're now the Canadian representative for that work. And so I see a wonderful convergence here of positive psychology and strength-based leadership.
And how's the conference been for you so far?
So far it's great. Yeah, it's just getting started, but I've enjoyed very much what I've been hearing so far.
And if there was one nugget, especially from the strengths-based leadership perspective, and you know, you and I were in a session there about social, emotional, and a couple of things from Bob Valoran this morning, what's one little nugget from what you've heard so far that maybe ties into this area of interest of strengths-based leadership for you?
Well, the phrase I just heard picked up in the last session, that we are wired for positivity and conditioned for negativity.
Yes.
And in our work of strength-based leadership, we use a lot of 360 tools where you get feedback
yes.
from everybody around you anonymously. And the natural tendency is to zero in immediately on the negatives,
yes.
on the weaknesses. And so helping people to focus on the positive and on strengths. And Zenger Folkman's research shows that if you take a strength that's at, say, 75% and take it up to 85 or 90%, you'll be twice as effective as taking something that's weaker and trying to improve it by that same percentage.
So it's kind of like that chaos theory idea, the small change as an input can create a really big change on the output.
Absolutely. Strengths is something you can really leverage from. And partly it's because in our first session we heard about passion.
Yes.
And it's very closely connected. In fact, there's a little grid that we use when we give feedback to leaders and help them figure out what to focus on. And it's strength, what's your passion, and then what's the organizational need. And it's the intersection of those three that really make for the most effective development.
Fascinating. Finally, Jim Clemmer, based on your own personal life and your personal career trajectory and the twists and turns in your story,
sure.
What can you share with listeners about what you've learned about making good career and life choices from your own life experience?
Sure. Well, way back when my very first job was president of the day, who was a very inspiring, positive sort of individual, said, when you love what you're doing, you never have to work again. And that became a career beacon for me. And when I hit those times that it felt like work, I knew something had to change. And in some cases, it was I had to find a new job or move somewhere else because the passion just wasn't there.
Great, great experience and advice for listeners. If listeners do want to find out more about you and your work, how do they do that?
JimClemmer.com. So it's C-L-E-M-M-E-R. JimClemmer.com is my website.
Great, Jim. Thanks for joining us here on Career Buzz today.
Good. Thanks.
You've been listening to interviews conducted at the Canadian Positive Psychology Association's conference in Toronto, July 20 and 21. I'm your host here on Career Buzz, Mark Franklin, practice leader of Career Cycles, a career management social enterprise. And I'm very happy to be hosting this special edition of Career Buzz, especially for members of the Association of Career Professionals International tuning in on the internet from around the globe. It was a real pleasure to attend the conference as your Career Buzz correspondent, and I collected a number of interviews. Part one is today. Part two will be played on September 12th. So I'm looking forward to sharing more of that. If you want to tune in to any of our inspiring past shows, do check out the archive of Career Buzz shows at careercycles.com and click the Career Buzz link. For example, on August 1st, we had a great show about living, loving, and working together as a couple. And we had two couples share their story of working and living together. You'll hear Sophia Horowitz and Greg Woolner tell their story of co-leading CoLab, an organization based in Halifax dedicated to collaboration and community building. So that's the Career Buzz link at careercycles.com. Coming up in the interviews from the Canadian Positive Psychology Conference Association, we have conference chair Jamie Grumman on something he calls halcyonic well-being. Learn about that from Jamie in a few minutes. Also, Jamie Cundy, another Jamie from Calgary, on solving the world's problems through music with her organization called Song for Africa. But we continue next with Haesun Moon. Haesun leads Solution Focused Canada. She's the program director of Solution Focused Coaching at the Faculty of Social Work at the University of Toronto. You'll learn from Haesun three questions that can increase effectiveness of any meeting with any helping professional by 40% and help move from fascination to solution creation. So here are the next set of interviews from the Canadian Positive Psychology Conference, and I'm your host, Mark Franklin, here on Career Buzz.
Haesun Moon, welcome to Career Buzz.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's very nice to be here.
What do you like about your career these days?
What do I like about it? I like it that it's... there are just many different opportunities in my career to meet people from many different walks of their lives. And I get to have great conversations with them in my practice. So I think that's what I really like.
And what are you doing? You have a practice, you're connected to the University of Toronto. What are all the things that make up your career?
Currently, I am, my position is a program director at Faculty of Social Work in their continuing education program called Solution Focused Brief Coaching. So we have coaching program going on, and just the people from different places of their life, they show up, and we just usually have fun. So that's what I do. And I am also in the PhD program at U of T in adult education.
Sounds like a pretty busy career you've got.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, people get to what they're doing in so many different ways,
right,
and trajectories. What's one turning point in your own career story that you can share with listeners?
Hello.
Okay. One turning point in my story is when I was doing my master's. I was registered for a class called Organizational Development. So I was sitting in my class and waiting for this professor to show up. And he showed up looking like, you know, Freud with the white beard,
yes,
and all those,
yes,
things. And I'm thinking, interesting. And it was all day course. And as he was talking about, you know, different things, it made a lot of sense in organizational development. And I thought, interesting. But he talked a lot about counseling and coaching. And I thought, Okay, that makes sense. But now, when do you talk about organizational development? So after the first break, I said, Dr. Werner, when are you going to start talking about organizational development? And he looked at me and he said, I think you're sitting in the wrong class.
So it was the influence of other people, as it is in so many other stories of people influencing you. So it was Professor Werner.
Yeah, it was a wrong class I was sitting in. But by the end of 1.5 hours in the morning, I fell in love with it. And it's called solution-focused brief coaching. So I decided to stay in this class instead of the other class. And that's how it all started.
Excellent. So, hey, Stein, here we are at the Canadian Positive Psychology Association's conference. You've just presented a little bit on the solution-focused brief coaching model. What are a couple of things from the work you're doing and the research that supports it that you can share with listeners that might help them understand it and might be useful in their own careers and lives?
You know, we started the session with three questions, and I hope it's actually relevant to a career as well. First question is, usually people are working on something. And the first question I asked was, of all the things that you are doing in your professional life, either searching or doing, what do you find most fascinating? And the reason for that question is, there usually is that nugget for your passion somewhere. So you might want to get into explore those things instead of just looking what's available. Think about your passion and what do you find fascinating? The second question was, what would you find most rewarding to develop further? So whatever that you have right now in terms of your career, there may be one or two different areas that you want to develop a little bit further, and it will be rewarding for you.
And should that be flowing from the first question of what you found fascinating, or might it be something different?
I usually find it, usually it's connected.
Connected,
because you will somehow get to that point of passion anyway.
Yes, yes.
And then the third question was, suppose, imagine yourself. Suppose that you are more or less satisfied and you're thinking to yourself, how did I get here? I'm actually quite content with my career. What is happening right now? What's different about that time?
Right. So what are the clues that you're noticing as if the thing already happened?
Exactly.
Right.
And, you know, the beauty of doing that is a lot of times people who are actually helping other people, usually they think they need to help people problem solve. But actually what happens is people usually they are the experts of their own lives, and they usually are working on something and they have good reasons to be considering getting some help. So as a helping professional, really what you can do is instead of working so hard, harder than your client to find answers, really you need to be working hard to facilitate the process to bring out the resources the client is bringing to the table.
Yeah, that's great. Now, that bringing out the resources that the clients bring, listeners who might be driving in their cars or listening on their computers, that was a one interesting thing that you shared in the session about how much of the positive outcomes of a helping conversation are actually there because of those client resources, that the client brings a good chunk of the resources to that session. Mm-hmm. How big is that?
The research shows that it's close to 35% to 40%. So if you are able to tap into the client's resources, your success rate of helping someone is up by 35% to 40%.
So for instance, back to that last question that you shared a minute ago, if you start to say to a client to pretend that this great thing has happened, which I know is a kind of question from the solution-focused model, but it puts them in the mindset of the things that they already want, and then you ask them to look for clues or to notice things, that's accessing their resources in a way I think that uses their imagination to connect with what they want instead of using their imagination to predict bad outcomes, which is all about what worrying is. Mm-hmm. Is that how it works?
A lot of times people, when they set their goals, it's sometimes it's about stopping something.
Yes.
But if you're doing that, it's kind of like sitting in an ice cream store thinking, I'm going to stop eating ice cream, but you're still focusing on
it.
But just ask yourself, if you are not happy where you are, what do you want instead? And it may be a totally different direction. I asked myself that question about 10 years ago, When I was studying psychology, and I ended up becoming a jazz pianist right now because I asked the question, and what do I want instead? I thought, I want to play, you know, jazz piano in a local pub as my part-time job, and that just came up because I asked the question.
And you're doing that now?
Oh, yes. Well, not at a local pub, but from, you know, here and there, sometimes I do.
Great. Thanks for sharing that with us. So finally, Hei-san, from your own story, you know, you've told us a little bit of the twists and turns and how you made some changes in your education.
Right.
What can you share with listeners about what you personally have learned about making good career and life choices?
I think things that happen in your life bring you a couple choices. And I think if you can approach those choices with curiosity, instead of being in your old pattern of thinking, instead of doing that, seeing those things through the lens of curiosity, I think they will bring a lot more opportunities than you actually expect to get.
Great advice. Mm-hmm. If people want to find out more about you and your work and your programs, how do they do that?
I do have a website, which is www.solution-focused.ca, or U of T Faculty of Social Work Continuing Education in Solution Focused Brief Coaching.
Hei-san Moon, thank you so much for joining us here on Career Buzz.
Well, thank you.
Jamie Grumman, welcome to Career Buzz.
Thank you very much.
What do you like about your career these days?
What I love about my career is I love the freedom that I have to pursue my interests. I love the fact that it's like being an entrepreneur. I'm in charge of the projects I initiate and how intensely I work on them. If I get bored, I can drop them. It's entirely up to me. I love that. And I love the intellectual stimulation and the variety of topics I get to work on.
Great. Listeners might say, gee, I want some of that. How do I get that? What do you actually do that gives you all of those things?
Well, if you get a PhD, you become a professor, you can do it too. That's what it is being a professor. That's the life of a prof. That was actually my original career intention was to be a consultant. And I did that briefly and saw how they lived and thought, this is not very good. I'm going back to academia because lifestyle is great.
People will be interested in that story. But just fill in the blanks. Where are you a prof? What are you doing? What's the program or department?
I'm a professor in the business school at the University of Guelph.
And also, we're here at the Canadian Positive Psychology Association. You're connected to this also. What's your role here?
I am. I'm the chair of the board of directors.
Right on. So what's one turning point that you can share? Maybe something about that story you just mentioned, because that's kind of interesting, going out, being a consultant, and then deciding you wanted to come back. Is that a key turning point that you can share with listeners about how you actually ended up here as a professor?
Yeah, I think so. The reason I made the switch was for lifestyle reasons. And, you know, here we are at a conference devoted to living well. And I got out of consulting because I didn't think they lived well. They made a lot of money, and I was, I think, a little more materialistic than I am today and wanted to make a lot of money and knew I was going to. And in the end decided there's more to life than money. And I wanted a better quality of life instead of a higher standard of living.
Mm. What was the reaction among your peers and colleagues when you said, I'm leaving consulting and I'm going to go back and do a PhD?
I had the PhD. It was at the end of the PhD that I was doing the consulting. The people that I worked with were a little surprised, I think a little disappointed. I was doing well there.
Yes.
And family and friends were very supportive. I have good friends and family that would support me whatever choice I make. So, yeah, that was good.
So you made it through that change.
It felt so natural and so right when I did it. I know it was the right. And if I look back now, I couldn't be happier. I love what I do, and so glad that I had this eye-opening experience that turned me back on the right course.
Nice. So here we are at the conference, and you've just presented on a topic called halcyonic well-being. What is that?
Halcyonic well-being is an approach to happiness. What we've argued in this presentation in our work is that the current way psychologists think about happiness is deficient. There are two primary ways. One focuses on pleasure, one focuses on developing yourself, and there's an approach to happiness that's overlooked, and that is this halcyonic approach that involves doing nothing and just being happy in the moment and not striving for anything, not being goal-oriented. This shouldn't, for most people, consume them, but it's a part of the puzzle that's being overlooked.
Wow, I can feel myself relaxing just as you say that.
Awesome.
So what have you found? I know you've been doing some research and trying to figure all this stuff out, and you're trying to introduce something here. What have you discovered?
Well, we've discovered some relationships that are striking and surprised us. This is preliminary research. It's new stuff. We've found that, first of all, we've been able to develop a scale to measure halcyonic well-being. It demonstrates relationships with other variables that it should, so it correlates with other measures of subjective happiness. It demonstrates discriminant validity, which means it doesn't correlate with things it shouldn't correlate with, right? If it's a new form of well-being, it shouldn't correlate with existing forms of well-being, and it doesn't. Things that should predict it, we find they do predict it. So things like mindfulness and being appreciative predict it. So it's really, you know, like an archaeologist, we've uncovered bones that have been lying there for a long time, and we're presenting this to the world now.
And what does it look like if a listener is trying to figure out, gee, am I experiencing this kind of well-being now? You know, it's a kind of do-nothing. Is it sitting under a tree meditating? What are the things that listeners would recognize or maybe want to do because it actually predicts a sense of well-being?
Yeah, well, meditation is a good way to get there. Sometimes I describe halcyonic well-being as, or compare it with hedonic well-being. Hedonic well-being is about experiencing pleasures.
Eating, physical, getting a massage,
absolutely,
stuff like that.
But halcyonic well-being is about experiencing, period. So just being conscious, and being conscious of being conscious.
In the present moment.
The magic of being conscious is enough for some people to make them happy. I woke up today. That's enough, right? I have no guarantee that's going to happen tomorrow. Here I am. I'm going to enjoy the moment for what it is.
Right on. So also in your career, you've now taken on this role of the chair of the board of the Canadian Positive Psychology Association. What's your experience been? What can you share with listeners about the organization in case they're curious or maybe they've never heard of positive psychology?
Well, this conference was a real sort of coming out party for us. We didn't know what to expect. We were hoping it would be a good conference. The feedback we're getting is just blowing our minds. I mean, everybody is coming back to us saying, you know, not just thanks for a good conference, but this is the best conference I've ever been to. I've been getting that many, many times. So we're just so happy about that. Positive psychology is the study of what makes life worth living. And the Canadian Positive Psychology Association tries to disseminate knowledge about how to do that. And if anyone wants to learn more, they should just go to our website, Positive Psychology Canada, and check us out and sign up, become a member, join our mailing list, attend our webinars, learn more about it.
How has it been for you personally to be the chair of the board and be part of this whole thing?
I have been interested in how to live well forever from the time I was in the single digits years old. And for me to be here at this, you know, my own conference with my own team, talking, giving talks on these topics that are so central to who I am is a little bit surreal. It's fantastic.
Finally, from your own personal experience now, Jamie, you told us a little bit about your career trajectory and what you tried and what's working for you. What can you share with listeners what you've learned about making good career and life choices?
Well, it's a bit of a loaded question. I mean, you know, I'm tempted to say, you know, follow your passions, do what you love. But not everybody can do that, right? Not everybody has the resources or the life circumstances are such that they can do that. But I would say strive for that. Try to do that. You know, we only get one shot at this thing called life, as far as we know, and we want to make the most of it. And it's not always fun. It's not always easy to be here in this thing called life, but to the extent that we can, I think we should try to make the most of it and even in difficult circumstances, find that, you know, silver lining and develop the resilience and the courage to maybe make some changes that we might otherwise not make.
Right on. Jamie Grumman, thank you so much for joining us here on Career Buzz.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Nikki Clark, welcome to Career Buzz.
Hi, thank you.
So what do you like about your career?
I work at the University of Ottawa as a professional counselor and coach, and I like meeting with students. I like the diversity of issues that I get to address. I enjoy working with the population, and there's a lot of task variety in my role that I really appreciate.
What's one turning point or one interesting thing you can share with listeners about how you ended up doing this work that you're doing?
I think it's to stick to things you're passionate with. This isn't a field that I started in. When I started my career, I worked in high tech, but I always had a passion for working with people and helping people. And I stuck with that passion, and I continued to be curious about opportunities and experiences that would lead me to a career in this field.
And what was that turning point then? That sounds like there was a big change somewhere in your story. What was that?
I think it was continuing to be curious, but also open to new experiences. So learning about new experiences and being willing and able to take risks.
Mm-hmm. Now, here we are at the Canadian Positive Psychology Association's conference. You actually presented this morning on some really interesting programs that you've implemented at the University of Ottawa. Very briefly, can you just say what was it and what did you find from doing that?
Well, presenting at the first ever Canadian conference is exciting. I find the enthusiasm around positive psychology, the research and the practical applications is gaining, and it's exciting to be a part of that.
So the actual presentation, though, what the program that you actually led at University of Ottawa, what was that?
So what we did is we got permission to use a positive psychotherapy manual, and we adapted some of the material in the manual, and we developed a four-session workshop for students entitled Skills for Better Coping. And the objective of the workshop was to treat students with mild to moderate depression by really focusing on increasing pleasure, meaning, and engagement in their lives. And we used interventions from positive psychology throughout the workshop. So we focused on strengths, on gratitude, on savoring, and on connections.
And what did you find from the students who went through it?
The testimonials were remarkable in terms of students' openness and interest in being able to focus on positives in their life rather on sort of this deficit remediation model that's looking at negatives and how do we move away from that. So the enthusiasm was there. They found they were able to engage in the interventions and then continue to apply them in their daily lives.
Awesome. Well done. And as a delegate to this conference, what do you find interesting or valuable for your own personal and professional work?
Well, I truly believe in positive psychology, and so far what I've seen in the conference is a lot of the presentations have also focused on evidence-based practice. So I'm excited by all the research that is currently going on and continues to go on that supports a lot of what I think we know intuitively, but is still continuing to be supported by research.
Right on. Finally, Nikki, from your own personal story and experiences, what can you share with listeners about what you have learned about making good career and life choices?
It's a good question. I would say stay curious, because I think curiosity is what it opens doors.
That's nice. Stay curious. It's almost like the action that comes from the curiosity is its own reward if you stay curious.
Yes, absolutely.
Right on. Nikki Clark, thanks so much for joining us here on Career Buzz today.
Thank you.
Cindy Fruitman, welcome to Career Buzz.
Hi, Mark.
What do you like about this whole volunteer experience that you're doing here at the Canadian Positive Psychology Association's conference?
Well, what I like so much is meeting other people, meeting like-minded people, also being able to come to the conference, you know, as a volunteer was a wonderful opportunity to me, where I otherwise I couldn't have attended.
Nice. So people often get lots of good experiences out of volunteering. What are you getting out of it?
I think it's, as I said, I'm using skills that I can develop even more, like the communication skills. You've got to be very assertive when you're trying to move people between locations, being able to support the people who are also speaking as well as the delegates here.
Right on. Sometimes people get a fee waived or they get in for free. If you volunteer, if you offer to volunteer, it's a good idea. If people want to get to conferences, they might consider volunteering. Was that the case here?
Yeah, absolutely it was. And it's a wonderful way for all of us who are volunteering to be able to be exposed to what the latest research is, who the practitioners are, what the latest trends are. So it was just a wonderful opportunity for all of us, and we've really been loving it.
You're also a delegate here. You've been participating in some sessions, going to really stimulating and fascinating speakers. What do you like about all of the delegate experience you've been having?
As a delegate, I can't believe I'm so impressed with and so proud of all the diversity of the topics, of the different programs that are available. I just think that we're covering such a broad base of trends in positive psychology as well as its recent applications. So,
any one thing that stands out for you from the keynotes to the presentation we were just at that you can share with listeners?
I love the keynote with, from Gary Latham. That was just really wonderful.
That was a guy talking a little bit about subconscious goals. He was talking about subconscious goals and how we can influence our own goals with these kind of subconscious images and stuff like that.
Absolutely. And like me, if you're a coach or a trainer, you can think about how you can actually help prime or coach your clients. So it was so helpful from that perspective. Also, humor and positive psychology was the most interesting talk.
Nice. And if you were to offer advice to listeners about why they might want to volunteer in their own lives, what would you say?
I absolutely would.